Welcome to Walasaha. My name is Dominique Narales. It's the curious home for good troublemakers, world changers, and the dream chasers. And for 2023, we're embarking on a special series with the Caribbean Youth Environment Network called In Betweenity with Green Pod, made possible through the generous partnership with the Clara Lana Foundation. In this episode, we'll be talking about probably the most popular COP, Conference of Parties of the UNFCCC, seeking... In this episode, we'll be talking about probably the most popular COP, Conference of Parties of the UNFCCC, and seeking to demystify this grandeur symmetry of existential importance. COP28 is set to be the final and arguably most important display of symmetry in 2023, set to happen November 30th to December 12th. This meeting, as the ones before, is critical for the globe, but especially those like us from the Global South, dotted with less developed countries that are, as we know, disproportionately affected by the atrocities of climate crisis, increasing sea levels, monstrous hurricanes, and parching droughts. The president-designate of COP28, Dr. Sultan Bin Ahmed Al-Jaber, stated at the Petersburg Climate Dialogue that, quote, "We want COP28 UAE to be remembered for uniting everyone in action. For the Caribbean, one of the most prominent voices and proponents of climate action has been Prime Minister Mia Motley."
The pandemic has taught us that national solutions to global problems do not work. We come to Glasgow with global ambition to save our people and to save our planet, but we now find three gaps: on mitigation, climate pledges or NDCs. Without more, we will leave the world on a pathway to 2.7 degrees, and with more, we are still likely to get to 2 degrees. These commitments made by some are based on technologies yet to be developed, and this is at best reckless and at worst dangerous. On finance, we are $20 billion short of the $100 billion, and this commitment, even then, might only be met in 2023. On adaptation finance remains only at 25%, not the 50-50 split that was promised nor needed given the warming that is already taking place on this earth. Climate finance to frontline small island developing states declined by 25% in 2019. Failure to provide the critical finance and that of loss and damage is measured, my friends, in lives and livelihoods in our communities. This is immoral and it is unjust.
I wanted the 411 on what really happens at these huge meetings, which at this goal is being hosted by the United Arab Emirates. To help us demystify what happens in this big meeting, we spoke to
Sumit Betancourt, who is the MRP officer, the Forestry Ministry. Welcome to In Betweenity. We are joined here by Mr. Sumit Betancourt, who is the MRV officer at the Ministry, the Forestry Ministry. And he's here to talk about his experience, what he knows about COP, to help us try to unravel what happens at this big, big meeting that costs the UN and all our countries a whole lot of money each year. So welcome, Sumit.
Thank you, Dominique. It's a pleasure to be here with you. I appreciate the invite. And yeah, I think there's a lot of mystique around the COP. I think before attending, I had similar opinion. And I mean, even when you're in the process, there's still quite a lot to process within that process, right? So as you dive a bit more into it, you learn a bit more. But I'm happy to speak about a bit of the exposure that I've had so far. So again, I'm happy to be here talking to you a bit.
Of course. Thank you very much for taking the time out to join us. Now, I want to jump in early and ask you first a bit about you, what you're doing now. Why are you, as a young person, in this environmental space?
Yeah, that's a good question to start off with. I mean, I think coming from a country like Belize, a very high forested nation, and historically, we've been into a lot of conservation, protection of our environment. And I was born and raised in San Ignacio town, so the western part of the country. I've always been exposed to nature. I mean, I think that was a part of what we do a lot growing up, mm-hmm. just enjoying rivers. My dad had a farm, so fortunately I was able to really immerse myself into this field from an early age. So that's where I really developed my interest. Fast forward to my academic exposure. So I attended the University of Belize. I did an associate's degree in biology and a bachelor's degree in natural resource management. I jumped into the climate space professionally in 2018 as part of the Red Plus Readiness Project, which was coordinated by the National Climate Change Office, the government of Belize. And from there is really where everything took off for me as it relates to really getting into the UNFCCC, their processes. As you know, Red Plus is actually Article 5 of the Paris Agreement. So I started to immerse myself a bit more into that. I really started out with a lot of research focused on the permanent sample plot network of Belize, because Red Plus is a forest-based initiative. Right. And so it involved quite a lot of research, and that's where I started off as a technician for the project. And as we dived a bit deeper into this, it started to connect a bit with Article 6 of the Paris Agreement, which has to do with markets, carbon credits, which is one of the hot topics these days. Mm-hmm. And I eventually attended COP. My first COP was COP26 in Glasgow. And then I attended COP27 in Egypt last year. And I actually had my first exposure to the June sessions this year.
Okay, so tell us a bit about, well, COP. So COP starts before COP starts in this, what they call the June meetings, right?
Right.
So the June, what happens in the June meetings, and why are those meetings important to inform what then happens at what is now going to be COP28 at the United Arab Emirates?
Right. So essentially the subsidiary body sessions in June, so you have the SBI, Subsidiary Body for Implementation, and the SUBSTA. So there are a few agenda items under each of these. So delegates or negotiators from all parties who are signatories to the UNFCCC, the Paris Agreement, you know, it's a party-driven process. Mm-hmm. And so representatives from each country, including Belize, attend the June sessions to really start to make some progress or start discussions prior to the COP, in this year, COP28. So it's really having those discussions early on so that when you get to COP, there's already some progress made, and hopefully you can get some final decisions at COP28. So it's really a preparatory session for the COP28. So official decisions are then taken or decided at COP28. So that's really the primary focus for the SBs. It's like a pre-session to that main session.
Right, which makes sense, because you don't want to go in just building what your asks are going to be. You want to have a foundation and really relationships with other parties and all stakeholders to have a proper discussion and make full use of the actual COP.
Definitely.
So you've been at two COPs. You mentioned earlier you've been to Glasgow and you were in Egypt. Walk us through how COP works. Like, I know it's I looked at the website for this year's COP, and there's a whole lot going on. How do young people, particularly young professionals like yourself, are just young people who have been invited, because I know there's a mechanism to have young people at the negotiating table. Now, walk us through, you know, how that works. What does that look like? How do you go through that jungle of COP?
Right. So, I mean, first and foremost, from a country perspective, again, as signatories to the UNFCCC, the Climate Change Convention, Paris Agreement, all the decisions that have been taken as part of these agreements are party driven. And so Belize has been a signatory for the UNFCCC, I believe, since its inception. We're signatories to the Paris Agreement, which was in 2016. And so we are annually we're invited to these negotiating sessions. Belize has been attending for many years now. But me personally, like I mentioned, through the Red Plus Readiness Project, it really established that there was quite the opportunity for Belize as it relates to Red Plus results-based payments, which is, again, this is a mechanism under the Paris Agreement,
right.
Focused on developing countries, high forest, low deforestation countries, which I mean, Belize is by definition exactly that. And so that's how I really got into this space. And nationally, there was the decision to really start to expand Belize's representation at the COPs, which is critical. I mean, as one of my mentors in the space, another senior negotiator, says, if you're not at the table, then you get the crumbs, right? So you can't really say much if you're not there trying to give that input. So really, that's how I got into it. And my focus was Article 6 of the Paris Agreement, or is the Article 6 of the Paris Agreement, which focuses on market and non-market approaches. And this, of course, is directly connected to our efforts under Article 5, which is Red Plus and Red Plus results-based payments, and trying to get that connectivity into Article 6, which was one of the key parts of the negotiations going back for some time now. Unfortunately, now Article 5 is a part of or qualifies for Article 6. So yeah, my focus has been Article 6, again, market, non-market mechanisms. So Article 6 is essentially split into three sections, Article 6.2, 6.4, and 6.8. 6.2 is International Transferable Mitigation Outcomes, or ITMOs. So this occurs bilaterally between parties or countries in order to meet their nationally determined contributions, their NDCs. Article 6.4 is a bit more project-based, and Article 6.8 is non-market aspect of Article 6, which focuses on capacity building, technology transfer, and so forth. So yeah, that's how I got into the space, and I've been representing Belize at the negotiating table, focusing on Article 6. My first COP, actually, I shadowed one of the main negotiators at the time who was focusing on Article 6. Because it's you get some training before going, but really when you're there at your first COP, it's really a wild experience. There's, like you mentioned, there's a lot going on. If you think just, you know, visiting the COP28 page, you can already see or anticipate the amount of things or moving parts. So yeah, on my first, I went prepared understanding what it is Article 6 was about. And with my connection with Article 5, the Red Plus aspect, you know, technically I was there, but really experiencing how the negotiations work, the scheduling, for instance, which sometimes just changes on the fly, the agenda items. It was really a thorough experience in such a short space of time, no?
Right.
And then, of course, when I attended COP27, it becomes much easier. You've already been through that initial shock of a COP. So, and then, you know, you're much more focused. You understand what it is you need to do and how to do it. But in this space, some of the senior representatives say you're still a rookie. Until after your third COP, then you've been fully baptized into the process. So I'm still a rookie, really.
Still a rookie.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that sort of answers your question.
Yeah, it does. It does. And I think it helps the audience understand, too, that there's a lot of moving parts. I know, for example, I got some training with Red Plus when I was right. The media, so there was this incredible training with the media. They took us out for a few days, I think, and we had to really write a news story about, you know, conservation, climate action, but focused on through the lens of Red Plus. I know a little bit about that, and it's a initiative I very much support as activists in the environmental and climate action space, but also as just a Belizean who values this natural resource that we have. Right. So you told us a bit about your experience of COP, how you walked into it. Now I'm going to ask you what may or may not be a difficult question. I want you to narrow down, you know, what has been you're a young professional in the space as well. Over the last 28 COPs, and as a person who comes from a small island developing state as well, what do you think has been one of the most important wins that we have had, and achievements out of COP, something that is tangible, something that we can say, yes, without the COP, we wouldn't have gotten this. What are some of those things, if any, that you can identify?
Well, I mean, again, climate change is not something that is specific to any one country or any one region. It's really something global. So I think in itself, again, the Paris Agreement in itself was really one of those milestones in the century. I mean, I think, you know, one of the few moments where we all agree as parties to, you know what, this is the issue, this is what we need to do. So really, firstly, identifying that we needed to come together and really address that, again, is one of the big achievements, especially for small island states like Belize, because it recognizes that we are some of the most, or the most impacted nations as it relates to climate change impacts, right? I mean, and with so minimal contribution to this phenomena in general. Mm-hmm. So I mean, that's one of the big achievements. But again, it's a two-sided coin, because although it's one of those big achievements, and there's been quite a lot of commitments, especially financially, in terms of supporting initiatives by small island states, which haven't materialized. I think that's one of the downsides to this. We agree and recognize that there needs to be support for small island states, but you know, sometimes that support, the support committed, isn't realized. No, so I think that's also one of the pitfalls there that I would say.
I when we first started this series, I spoke to Javonic Henry. He's from St. Lucia. Our last episode was with Miss Kristen Marin, who is also Belizean. And I often ask them, which is a question I will pose to you now, what would you say are the Caribbean's priorities? What must we leave COP with when COP finishes? Leading, I know that there's a huge focus on global stocktake this year. What must we do to say that, yes, this COP that cost us a lot of money was a win for small island developing states that are most affected by this climate change phenomenon?
Right. So, I mean, every year, really, you know, the small island states, again, we negotiate as blocks. You have the Alliance of Small Island States. We have specific thematic areas as well. So Article 6 is one of those thematic areas. You have transparency, you have finance mitigation. So each of these thematic areas have a specific focus, right? But some of the main things that we, again, always want to highlight, you know, the commitment from parties, from especially Annex I countries, which have committed to contribute to the development or support small island states. And this support, again, doesn't materialize. I think it's something that we repeat almost every year, and they hear it, but you know, it's a challenge to really get that moving. Again, it's a party-driven process. Although they recognize this, I think there's quite a limit, or we're limited in terms of actually getting that support across the line. No? But I think this year is a critical year for the global stocktake. We're going to see, since our commitment in Paris and some of our initial NDCs, where we are globally. And I think some of the initial reports that have been released already tell us that we're nowhere near where we're supposed to be. And we need to recognize that, but not only recognize it, I mean, I think we have to act on it. Right. When I say we, I mean some of the biggest emitters in the world, no? So, you know, we're at COP28, and I think it's really high time we start making some of these incremental achievements. I think we have the science-based evidence. We know what we need to do, and it's really just a decade of action now. And I think that's what's lacking. That's one of the areas that we want to put pressure on. And I think as small island states, we've been putting pressure on in terms of action. adequate action and just living up to the commitments that a lot of parties have made in this process.
For sure. I think now that, like my grandmother said, time for stop talk and just do the thing, right? Like,
yeah.
Get it done, because I think there's not an appreciation for the more than, of course, the economics of this thing, because I think that things don't move unless people recognize that there are economic losses to be made. But to me, what is more important is that literal people's livelihoods are at stake. And
yeah,
it's not a thing that you just say and you just glance by and like, oh, well, yeah, people's lives are at stake. But that's a real thing. It's a real public health threat, a real national security threat, a real fiscal policy impediment. It affects everything. And I don't think there's a real, real, real appreciation for the magnitude of the situation.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think sometimes there's a disconnect from when within the negotiating space and what actually is happening on the ground. I mean, take Belize, for instance. I mean, we hear it quite a lot. We see it, especially like our fisher folk who live on the coast. I mean, a lot of people are just, you know, you ask someone, you know, my priority is three things: breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Mm-hmm. That's it, you know, and climate change has threatened that completely for me. You know, in all aspects, I mean, from you know, me bringing in an income for myself, my family, to feed my family, send my kids to school. So it's like it's a trickle-down effect, you know, it's snowballs. And I think that's where we need to bring that connection back to what really matters. And it's really the people, you know, suffering at the hands of the impacts of climate change. So you're right.
Yeah, everyday people. Now, Sumit, we are barreling to the end of our meeting here, our little summit of minds. And I wanted to ask you one final thing. I always reiterate throughout this conversation that you are a young professional. And so I want you to leave our young listeners with a word of, I don't know, inspiration, advice, call to action. So why this sort of work will be important for generations to come?
Right. I mean, I think first and foremost, getting young people more into the space, and I think more and more it's happening, fortunately, is critical. You know, when we talk about some of the commitments under the Paris Agreement, you know, with the main objective being limiting temperature rise to 1.5 degrees, to less than 2 degrees, and trying to aim for 1.5 degrees. We're talking about the end of the century. We're not talking about in 10 years, in 20 years. You know, we talk by decades and centuries. So, I mean, it's important for young people to be in this space. There's, you know, coming from a country like Belize, there's quite a lot of opportunities in terms of focusing in activities that are ongoing in conservation, in climate efforts. So for me, I would say, like, you know, just try and get involved in any way you can. I mean, sometimes, you know, there might not be a financial incentive at the end of that, but trust me, it pays off. It builds your professional expertise, and Belize, as we continue to grow in this space, there's a need for that. There's a need for the hungry youth, honestly, to be in this. And I think we've become a lot more vocal over the years, and we continue to be vocal, which is important. So just really start just exposing yourself into any opportunity that you can within this space. You might find it's a very, very big space. You might find an area that you fall in love with. I mean, I think coming from a conservation background, you know, the interest is there, but you might just get into a specific niche that you enjoy quite a lot. So exposure and just putting yourself out there and trying to get some experience in that regard is always critical. You know, I mean, I've been in this space for going a bit over 5 years now, and I still continue to grow. I still continue to learn a lot of new things every day, especially as it relates to the new UNFCCC process. And so, yeah, just try and aim for growth and try and take an opportunity to go out and, you know, volunteer if you can. That always plays a critical role in personal and professional development, really.
For sure. Well, after all of that, there's nothing left to be said. So, Sumit, thank you very much for joining us here on in the community. We look for, like, stay in contact, man. Like, I feel like
that's
super important for us in these small spaces to magnify and amplify the effect of our work. So thank you for joining.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And I think, you know, like, you, someone with your journalism experience or background, is important to really make these type of connections, you know. I mean, I'm not necessarily one of the most or I'm a bit shy at times, you know, to do these types of things, but I think it's important for people, you know, with your expertise, your experience, you know, your network, to really try and reach out to some of the youth and even senior people who are in this space and try to bring this type of message across, share our experiences with listeners. I think it's very important. You know, we all have a critical role to play, and I think this is definitely one of them, making that connection so that the message doesn't get lost, you know.
Yeah,
and that, but yeah, it was a pleasure having a conversation with you, Dominic.
Of course, thank you very much, Sweet.
Until next time, we encourage you to read a little bit deeper, lean into community, and hopefully that we've managed over the series to tickle your curiosity just enough to spur you to act. You can do that by joining any of our CYEN chapters across the region. Sign up by visiting cyen.org. To learn more about COP28 and what we hope to achieve, you can visit COP28.com. Thanks for joining us here at Wolasaha for In Betweenity, the Green Pod, made possible through the kind generosity of the Carolina Foundation.